It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful, if a little bit damp, Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 42 degrees. We have a heavy rain, a foggy mist, and east winds at 9 miles per hour at the airport. They are up to 2.5 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for rain for the rest of the day until about 1 a.m. That rain could be heavy at times and is now. High near 44, southeast winds 15 or 20, gusting to 25. East winds tonight 15 or 20, becoming light and variable after midnight. Coming up on the Midday Report, a high-profile lawsuit challenging a key part of Alaska's homeschool system moved ahead last week. And Bill Hill. Davis Hovey interviewed the U.S. House of Representatives candidate. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The Supreme Court has paved the way for people to access the abortion medication mifepristone by mail for now. NPR's Kerry Johnson reports a lower court restricted access to the pills nationwide last week.
That ruling Friday from the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals required patients to obtain mifepristone in person, prompting confusion and lawsuits. Makers of the drug filed emergency petitions asking the Supreme Court to step in. Justice Sam Alito, acting for the High Court, has now restored access to mifepristone by mail, at least for another week while the justices consider the issue. Medication abortions account for nearly two-thirds of such procedures in the U.S. Doctors who prescribe the pills by mail have been sending them to people in rural areas and states where the procedure has been banned. Nearly 4 years ago, the Supreme Court took away the nationwide right to abortion in a decision written by Justice Alito. Kerry Johnson, NPR News, Washington.
U.S. Central Command says it has destroyed several small Iranian boats in the Strait of Hormuz. NPR's Quill Lawrence reports the Iranians attacked U.S. ships protecting oil tankers.
Admiral Brad Cooper said that U.S. forces are working to create a safe passage for stranded oil tankers through the strait, and that this is a defensive mission on behalf of the international community affected by Iran's blockade. Speaking to reporters by phone, he said U.S. warships and tankers took no damage.
I can confirm there's been no U.S. military ships hit, and I wouldn't go into the details of whether the ceasefire is over or not.
The ceasefire question is key to the debate over whether the war with Iran has passed the 60-day mark and would require congressional approval under the War Powers Resolution. Last week, President Trump said in a letter to Congress that the ceasefire meant the war was, quote, terminated before the 60-day mark, despite ongoing naval blockades, which are acts of war. Quill Lawrence, NPR News.
Escalating military tensions in the Middle East put Wall Street investors on edge today. The Dow closed down 557 points, or more than 1%. Here's NPR's Maria Aspen.
Wall Street had largely shrugged off the war in recent days. Last week, the tech-heavy NASDAQ and the benchmark S&P 500 even hit new highs. But now, investors are getting worried again. The renewed hostilities sent the price of oil higher, sparking fears of more inflation. The energy crisis has already made some consumers cut back on vacations. Shares in Norwegian Cruise Line tumbled after the company cut its full-year outlook and said customers are rethinking their travel plans. Maria Aspen, NPR News.
Revisiting Wall Street, the Dow closed down 557 points, or more than 1%, to end the day at 48,941. The S&P was down 29. The NASDAQ was off 46 points. This is NPR.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT News, I'm Terry Haynes. At least four candidates are running against incumbent Nick Begich III so far for Alaska's lone seat in the U.S. House of Representatives. Bill Hill is a nonpartisan candidate on the ballot in this fall's election. Hill recently spoke with KMXT's Davis Hovey during his visit to Kodiak during Comfish last month.
My name's Bill Hill. I'm a lifelong Alaskan, Dena'ina Athabaskan. I live in Naknek out in Bristol Bay, home of the greatest sockeye salmon run in the world. I started out in a little village called Kakanok on the Iliamna Lake. There were about a little over 100 people there at the time. Real bush frontier upbringing, chopping wood, packing water. My parents always had 50-some-odd dogs. We raised and raced dog teams 40 yards to the outhouse, you know, all of the good stuff. A lot of hunting, fishing, and trapping to keep food on the table. A real good life full of hard work and, you know, work as a family. It was a good place to grow up. You know, I feel like there's a need in our nation for some good, solid Alaskans to take on the challenge of going to Congress and representing us and working to drive down the cost of living for Alaskans, working to fight corruption, and working to maintain the Alaska way of life. And I don't think that's being done right now. And so I've taken on the task of running for Congress, and I'm running for our sole U.S. House seat.
All sectors of the commercial fishing industry are experiencing, you know, all these headwinds right now. We've seen dropping prices, global competition in the markets. You know, processors are consolidating and closing. Fishermen are getting less pay. What would you kind of focus on to sort of help bring that cost down for fishermen and make Alaskan seafood more competitive?
I mean, you talk about the international aspect, you know, and essentially you have competitors who don't play by the same set of rules that Alaskans play by, who don't play by a set of rules that make sure that we have a good environment for our fish and game, who play by a set of rules where they don't have to abide by labor laws. And we need to work with our partners, maybe in Europe, to say, hey, you know, this seafood was caught either unethically or was using basically a really terrible labor system. We need to make sure we work with our partners to decrease that opportunity for people who are dumping fish on the market, is one way of putting it.
Alaska has long been looked at as a, you know, an oil state. We have a lot of critical minerals that the federal administration is starting to target. Where do you stand in terms of opening up different sectors of Alaska for resource development, mining, and more gas and LNG projects?
Let me make it clear up front. You know, I am pro-development, and Alaska is a resource development state. And you could even look at fisheries as resource development in some sense. But I think we need to be smart about that development. And I think we need to make sure that we look at how things are going to impact current industries. So some projects I don't believe belong, and Pebble is one of them. But there are other projects that we need to look at and make sure that we bring to Alaska because we are a resource development state. I think we need to make sure as a state that Alaskans are the greatest beneficiary of every project that happens. And I don't think that's necessarily the case anymore.
Switching gears again, how would you sort of address the needs of rural healthcare in the state of Alaska and just healthcare in the state as a whole?
Well, I think everybody should have access to good healthcare. That's the bottom line. Everybody should have access to good healthcare. And yes, it is difficult to deliver healthcare in some places, but does that mean we shouldn't do it? I don't think so. When we have an opportunity to improve healthcare, we should. You know, my opponent, you know, voted to do away with healthcare in Alaska. And some of our neighbors are, you know, on average are seeing a $900 a month increase in their health insurance. And I think we need to just continue working on at the federal government level to improve the healthcare that's offered.
And final sort of elevator pitch, I call it, I guess, if you were talking to voters here in Kodiak or elsewhere around the state, why should they vote for you to become our next representative in the U.S. House?
I'm somebody who's going to go to Congress, and I'm going to think about Alaskans from the moment I wake up, and I'm going to think about how to make Alaskans' lives better when I go to sleep. I'm not going to be there to cozy up to special interests. I'm not going to be there to side with billionaires. I'm not going to be there to give tax cuts to the ultra wealthy and to provide more tax loopholes for corporations. I'm going to be there to make life better for Alaskans.
Again, that was congressional candidate Bill Hill speaking with KMXT's Davis Hovey last month. You can listen to the full conversation online at kmxt.org. A high-profile lawsuit challenging a key part of Alaska's home school system moved ahead this week after an Anchorage judge denied a motion to dismiss the case. Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports.
The lawsuit centers on what are known as correspondence school allotments. Those are cash payments to families who homeschool their kids in the state's public correspondence school system. They're meant to pay for things like lessons and supplies. Some parents also use them to pay for private school tuition. A group of parents sued the state in 2023, saying the use of allotments on private school tuition violates the state constitution. Article 7 bars state spending, quote, for the direct benefit of any religious or other private educational institution. At first, a judge ruled the whole allotment system was unconstitutional. That was later reversed by the state Supreme Court, which sent it back to a lower court for a closer look at how school districts allow allotments to be spent. Then, earlier this year, a group of correspondent school parents represented by the legal nonprofit Institute for Justice asked the lower court judge to dismiss the case. They argued allotments are a direct benefit to correspondent school families, not private schools. But in an 8-page order on Monday, Superior Court Judge Laura Hartz disagreed. She said the Supreme Court's decision requires a review of how allotments are actually spent in practice. The plaintiffs, the state, and the school districts added to the case following the Supreme Court ruling all argued against dismissing the case and said a final ruling would require more evidence. The ruling moves the case into the discovery phase, where attorneys for the parties will exchange evidence as they build a case for a possible trial. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
Alaskans between the ages of 12 to 15 had the highest rate of ATV crash injuries compared with other age groups. That's according to data from emergency department visits from 2019 through 2024 in a bulletin released by the State Public Health Division. Riley Fitting is an injury epidemiologist for the state. He says it's a good reminder that even if a kid isn't driving an ATV, it's important for them to wear protective gear.
We saw very frequent injuries, like the specific injuries associated with ATV-related visits were lacerations, traumatic brain injuries, bone fractures, and those ED visits being common among youth.
He says riders should wear helmets, boots, and long pants and sleeves. Fitting says the north and southwest regions of the state had the highest rates of injury from ATV crashes. That's likely because more Alaskans ride ATVs for transportation in those areas, he says. Alaskans also die from ATV injuries at about four times the rate of people in the lower 48. Fitting says that's also likely a reflection of how much Alaskans use ATVs for transport.
Not all places in Alaska have roads that we can drive on. So often we have to rely on these machines to go over uneven terrain, snow, terrain that has water maybe running over it that's shallow enough. That's all in essence. We rely on these machines.
43% of ATV injuries in the state happen to ATV passengers. Fitting says for that reason, it's important that Alaskans don't overload an ATV with more people than capacity. Legislators grilled Governor Mike Dunleavy's pick for Attorney General during a series of contentious confirmation hearings last week. Attorney General designee Stephen Cox appeared before two Senate committees ahead of a confirmation vote expected in the coming weeks. Cox is a former U.S. attorney appointed by Trump to prosecute federal crimes in the Eastern District of Texas in 2020, after 3 years at the Justice Department's main office in Washington. Before Dunleavy appointed him last August to fill a vacancy left by gubernatorial candidate Treg Taylor, Cox was the chief legal officer for Bristol Bay Industrial, a subsidiary of the regional Native Corporation. Cox told lawmakers he'd focused on a few key areas in his 9 months in office: resource development, consumer protection, and his top priority, domestic violence and sexual assault.
I've spent much of my career in law enforcement settings where the stakes are real. Decisions affect liberty, public safety, and public trust. That experience shapes how I approach this office.
Lawmakers, though, raised deep concerns over a number of controversial choices Cox has made in his short tenure as Attorney General. Some question the Department of Law's advice to comply with a federal Justice Department request for confidential voter information, which sparked a lawsuit from civil rights groups. Other lawmakers question the large number of so-called amicus briefs the state has joined since Cox was appointed by Dunleavy. Senate President Gary Stevens, a Kodiak Republican, got a little choked up while asking Cox why he'd signed on to a brief in support of President Donald Trump's executive order sharply restricting birthright citizenship. Stevens said his own ancestors were immigrants.
It baffles me that people argue against that. It just baffles me. How can you or your department or anyone in the administration argue against birthright citizenship? It's in our Constitution. It's a moral issue. I'd appreciate your honest answer.
Cox said he'd given it a lot of thought. He echoed the Trump administration's position.
My view of the Constitution under the 14th Amendment is that it is not simply birth on the territory, that you also have to be not subject to the foreign jurisdiction, and that there has to be some kind of allegiance.
Cox characterized the questions as tough but fair. He's due for another confirmation hearing this afternoon. Hearings for dozens of other Dunleavy nominees to cabinet positions and various state boards and commissions are expected in the coming weeks ahead of the legislature's constitutional deadline to adjourn for the year. It's no secret that communities across Alaska have been struggling to retain teachers and child care professionals. In Petersburg, a high school program hopes to address that need while giving students hands-on experience in their community. KFSK's Taylor Heckert reports.
Yeah, it's not stopping, is it?
On a Friday afternoon in Jill Lenhard's class, there are a lot of crying babies. Crying robot babies, that is. Right now, they're hungry.
When you push it once, so let's go ahead and feed these babies.
Wait, come here, baby.
It won't stop.
Quit crying.
The babies are new, and everyone's still figuring out how to use them, including Lenhard.
I took one baby home to see how it all worked, and I took it home in a grocery sack because I didn't want to walk down the street carrying a baby. But then when I got home and I laid it on a counter, Matt, my husband, was like, "What is this?"
These babies are a part of a dual enrollment child development class Lenhard is teaching this semester. Over the course of four classes, students can earn up to 12 credits at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. This semester's class is about kids up to age four. Lenhard does a lot of hands-on activities. Each Wednesday, the high schoolers spend about half an hour observing classrooms at the elementary school and a nearby preschool. At this point in the semester, the students are pros. Walking up to Good Beginnings Preschool, sophomore Brody Whitethorn already knows exactly what the kids will be doing.
Today's usually the music day, and so we'll have our music lady there, and they will, like, come sit in your lap sometimes, but sometimes they just, like, run at you and just hop right in your lap, and it's so cute.
Daddy's taking us to the zoo tomorrow.
Brody and her partner sit down in a circle with the preschoolers and their teachers. One kid immediately crawls into Brody's lap. They join in on the preschool's music time.
Monkeys in the cage.
Afterward, the high schoolers reflect on what they've seen. Brody says one of the big things she's noticed is how preschoolers start to figure out their own emotions.
It's sharing and then, like, having, like, a kid wants something and asks, like, "Hey, can you hand me that?" And the kid kind of ignores them or doesn't hand it to them, and then they kind of get upset. But that's, like, just another thing that they're learning.
She says the preschool is exactly the kind of place she wants to work one day.
It's really, I feel like working with kids is, like, one of my favorite things because I have soon to have six siblings. And it's just, it's amazing.
Lenhard, their teacher, says this course helps students find careers working with children. That's what most of her students want to do when they get older.
Districts want to grow their own teachers, people who are, they understand these sort of more isolated rural communities in Alaska because they've grown up here and they really care about them. If we can, for our own teachers, students who want to go off and get a teaching degree and then come back and teach here, that's a really successful way to keep the population of teachers high.
And the students may have a chance to work in schools before they even graduate. The district's still working out the details, but students who have completed two of Lenhardt's classes may be able to work as paraprofessionals while earning high school credit. Lenhardt hopes that by the end of her classes, the students she works with will have a stronger sense of confidence.
I would love for them to just be very comfortable around kids, be able to just jump in and know how to help when they're with a group of kids, have a sense of accomplishment, like this is a path that I could take. If I decide I want to be a teacher, I know what I'm getting into.
Lenhardt modeled this program after one in Ketchikan. She says she's been a part of discussions with the University of Alaska Fairbanks to see if there's a way to expand the program beyond the two communities. In Petersburg, I'm Taylor Heckert.
But you gotta stop when I say freeze. Good job, everybody. That was really fun.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon, and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the fourth day of May, the year 2026. The sun rose today at 6:10. It will set again at 10:04. That will get us 15 hours and 54 minutes of daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 33 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 61, set in 1915, and then again in 2003. And our record low was 19, set in 1945. It is currently 42 degrees in Kodiak. It's been 42 degrees all day. It's also been raining all day. It's been foggy and misty all day. But the winds died down a bit. They have east winds at 9 miles per hour at the airport now, and they are still hanging at 2.5 miles of visibility. We are to expect rain this afternoon. Could be heavy at times, high near 44. Look for that rain to continue more or less until 1 a.m. this morning. Southeast winds 15 to 20, gusting to 25 today. Turning to the east tonight, 15 or 20. And look for an overnight low tonight of about 39. And look for those winds to die down and become light and variable after midnight. For tomorrow, partly sunny skies, just a chance of rain before 10 a.m. West winds 5 or 10. And for Wednesday, they are calling for mostly cloudy skies. Mostly cloudy skies on Thursday as well. And showers are likely for Saturday and Sunday. And Friday. We have an outgoing tide. Oh no, strike that. We have an incoming tide. Our next high tide will be at 4:56 this afternoon and be 6.5 feet, followed by a low tide at 10 p.m. exactly of 2.9 feet. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 5:09 this afternoon and be 11.5 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 10:42 p.m. of 4.1 feet. And your moon is at 92% and it's waning. Mariners, beware, we have a small craft advisory through Tuesday for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles, east 25 for today and tonight, 10-foot seas, building to 14 feet tonight. For tomorrow, southwest 20 and seas at 13 feet. Over on the west side in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory through tonight, northeast 30 today and northeast 25 tonight, 8-foot seas. Look for those winds to come down to the north 15 after midnight and seas to subside to 5 feet and finally to 3 feet after midnight. For tomorrow in the Shelikof, southwest 15 and seas to 4 feet. Just outside of the city of Kodiak and Chiniak Bay, small craft advisory today, southeast 25 becoming east 20 this evening, 10-foot seas subsiding to 7 feet this evening and finally to 3 feet after midnight. For tomorrow, variable less than 10 and seas at 3 feet. Notice is hereby given there will be a Board of Education work session at 6:30 p.m., immediately followed by a special meeting tonight in the District Services Conference Room. That's number F140 of the old high school wing. Items on the agenda include the FY27 certificated contracts and a request to approve a purchase order with King County Directors Association for roofing and building envelope inspection and maintenance. Again, that's tonight at 6:30. For more information, call the Secretary to the Board of Education at 907-486-7550. The Kodiak City Council will be holding a budget work session tomorrow night in the City Hall Conference Room. That meeting will begin at 5:30 p.m., and they will be holding a second budget work session on Thursday in the City Hall Conference Room. That meeting will also begin at 5:30 p.m. Both meetings are open to the public and will be web streamed. The web streaming links and meeting packets are available at the City of Kodiak website. If you need more information, contact the clerk's office at 907-486-8636. The Borough Lands Committee are having their regular meeting right now at the Borough Assembly Chambers. That started at 12 p.m. Tonight at 5:30 p.m., the Board of Equalization will be having their regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 5:30 p.m. And the Women's Bay Service Area Board will be having their regular meeting in the Women's Bay Fire Hall on Tuesday at 5:30 p.m. On Thursday, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having their regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. All these meetings are open to the public, and the packets are available at the Kodiak Island Borough's website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 with any questions. And you know it's springtime when it's time for the spring plant sale for KMXT. That's happening Saturday. Starts at 12 noon at 1223 West Kuzkov Street, which is off Mission Road. It's featuring vegetables, flower and herb seedlings, perennials, berries, rhubarb, shrubs, indoor plants, and more. For more information and to donate plants, call or text Marion at 907-539-5009. But again, that's Saturday, begins at 12 noon at 1223 Kuzkov, the big spring plant sale. Coming up in just a few minutes at 1 p.m. at the Kodiak Public Library, the Bridge Club will be meeting. Also, the library offers tech tutor time on Mondays from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Get help downloading e-books and audiobooks, learn to log into your library account, print from a phone, etc. Wednesday at 3 p.m., it's the Teen Dungeons and Dragons Club, open to middle school and high school ages. And this Saturday at 12:30 p.m., the library will roll out its new cooking cart for a demonstration on how to make pancit. Pancit is a traditional Filipino noodle dish. It's amazingly delicious. It's made from noodles, vegetables, a protein of some sort, and a savory sauce. The recipe will be given out at the end of the demonstration. Space is limited to 15 people. You can sign up at Sign Up Genius at the library's website or call them on the phone at 907-486-8686. Kodiak Kindness is having another of its infant nutrition workshops on Thursday. That's happening from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Kodiak Public Library. Join other parents for this informative, interactive workshop that teaches a developmental approach to introducing solids based on current infant feeding recommendations. All family members and caregivers are invited, and let them know ahead of time if you need support in Tagalog or Spanish. Visit kodiakkindness.org or call them at 907-539-2660 to register or for more information. But again, that's this Thursday, 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Kodiak Public Library.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.